Good morning to you. I'm Veronica Rickard, in today for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. With the Giants toppling the Patriots in yesterday's Super Bowl, you can't help but wonder whether the time is ripe for upsets. Recent polls show Barack Obama narrowing Hillary Clinton's lead in several of the Super Tuesday states, including the Brass Ring, California. On the other hand, Mitt Romney is stepping up attacks against frontrunner John McCain and making some headway, according to some polls. The table is set and the pieces are moving. This hour, the race to Super Tuesday. We'll try to get a lead on which way the wind is blowing with guest Ken Rudin, the NPR political editor. He writes the weekly column Political Junkie. Also, Matt Bai will join us at 9:30. He's contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine, author of The Argument, Billionaires, Bloggers, and the Battle to Remake Democratic Politics. His article, Backroom Choices, ran in the New York Times Sunday Magazine. This hour, join us with your Super Tuesday musings. How do you think Senator Obama's gains in California are going? And will John McCain close the deal? Will Wisconsin matter come primary day? Hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your calls. And we're joined first this hour by Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. Ken Rudin, good of you to be with us today.
What a game last night. What a game. Oh.
Talk about upsets, right?
Oh, well, we talk about Super. I mean, we talked about Super Bowl yesterday. We're talking about Super Bowl, Super Tuesday tomorrow. And a lot of upsets on people's minds. You know, you think that you know what's going to happen. John McCain was written off and left for dead as recently as last summer, last September, and suddenly he's the Republican frontrunner. I mean, the thought of McCain doing a Nexus search of McCain within 15,000 words of frontrunner, you'd never think it would happen. But here it is going into Tuesday as the leading candidate for the nomination.
Have you got a handle on what polls are saying about Romney inching up on him?
Well, I mean, Romney has obviously debated whether to write another check for his campaign. He's already spent $30 to $40 million of his own money. He's considering, he is spending about $1 million or so in California's primary, unlike New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, which are winner-take-all, and where the Giuliani endorsement of McCain is likely to help the Arizona senator. Romney is looking at states like California, perhaps Missouri, obviously his home state of Massachusetts and Utah to do somewhat okay on Super Tuesday. But California, as you said, is the big contest.
And you'd think, as going back to the Super Bowl just for a minute, you'd think that they might have sort of hit pause out of respect for the Super Bowl. But I understand that Bill Clinton was out watching the Super Bowl with Bill Richardson. So even that was in play.
Right. And I also understand that Mitt Romney couldn't watch the last 25 seconds of the game because of course, being a Massachusetts fan. A matter of fact, he emailed Tom Brady with some advice prior to the game. I remember Richard Nixon years ago. They didn't have email back then, but he called George Allen, who was the coach of the Washington Redskins, offering him advice. And, of course, that was the year the Redskins lost the Super Bowl. So presidential candidates and Super Bowls do not have much in common.
Well, going back to California now, you said that's the big piece of the pie. Recent polls show that Barack Obama is really closing the gap toward Hillary Clinton there. What's going on?
Closes the gap, and he's picked up some endorsements. He got Maria Shriver, the California First Lady, over the weekend. Prior to that, Ted Kennedy, the Massachusetts senator, of course, has been campaigning in California, you know, getting a lot of Viva Kennedy chants as his two brothers got in 1960 and 1968. But California also has been voting for quite some time. They have early voting there. And by all indications, Hillary Clinton has gotten a huge lead among those who have already voted. So the question is whether Obama is peaking in the polls and gaining on Clinton nationally, whether what he does on Tuesday can wipe out the lead she had in the people who have already voted. That's a huge question there.
Well, last night, looking at some websites close to 11 o'clock Central Time, I saw that there were a couple polls that actually showed him with a lead over Hillary Clinton in California.
Right. And again, as we say, that they were talking about the Tuesday, not the people who have already voted, but on Tuesday. Obviously, the Latino vote is key in California. Hillary Clinton has worked hard to win over the Latino vote. We saw her doing very well with Latinos in Florida and Nevada during the caucuses. And, of course, the black community is, of course, Obama's trying to rally the African-American votes. But, you know, stranger things have happened. We saw Maxine Waters, African-American congresswoman from California, endorsing Clinton. We've seen some key Latino voting groups going over to the Obama. It's really going to be tooth and nail, but it's interesting. It was once upon a time, it was the Republicans who were beating each other up. Of course, Mitt Romney is still attacking John McCain. But when all is said and done, it's very possible that when Tuesday is over, the Republicans will have a nominee and the Democrats will still be fighting.
That's what it's looking like. This is supposed to be a big decision day for both parties. And would this be a historic Super Tuesday, a Super Tuesday where not much was decided, at least looking that way for the Democrats?
Well, not much decided insofar as that the nomination battle still goes on. But given the fact that we're talking about 1,681 delegates are at stake on Tuesday, a lot will be decided. It's just that we may not be any closer to knowing who the nominee is. Now, I suspect, though, that it will be a better day for Hillary Clinton than Barack Obama, even though I've seen the national polls where Obama is closing the gap. Hillary Clinton still has a lead in California. She still has a lead in New York and New Jersey, where she's ostensibly from, or at least that she represents. And those are a big chunk of delegates. Now, Obama is doing well in the South, in Georgia, Alabama, perhaps Tennessee. Obama should do well in his home state of Illinois, although Hillary Clinton is competitive there. It's really it's hard to figure out what's going to happen, but nor should we have to figure out what happened. We could just let the voters decide. But it is just really interesting because if you think of 2000, Al Gore won Iowa and New Hampshire and the race was over. In 2004, John Kerry won Iowa and New Hampshire and the race was over. Here you have two titans, first African-American, serious African-American candidate, first serious female candidate. And here they are, history in the making. And both of them are neck and neck going into Super Tuesday.
Can you lay out a couple of scenarios for us in terms of the math with the delegates about what we could happen to see tomorrow?
Well, unlike the Republican Party, which has several winner-take-all states, no Democratic contest is winner-take-all. It's all proportional. So even if Hillary Clinton, just for argument's sake, wins New York, New Jersey, California, she could win 51-49, 52-48. And if that's the case, it also depends on where the delegates are going to go, because right now the name of the game is delegates. The Democrats have to reach 2,025 delegates to get the nomination. And it's going to be really, fighting tooth and nail every step of the way. If it's very close in many states, the delegate count could be very close too. And so once upon a time when we thought this would be the knockout blow for one candidate or the other, it can go very well on to February 12th in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, and February 19th in Wisconsin. Those of us with long memories remember that Wisconsin primary used to matter. It was a key primary for John Kennedy in 1960. Eugene McCarthy beat Lyndon Johnson there in 1968, even though Johnson had dropped out of the race like the day before. So once upon a time, Wisconsin was a celebrated primary, and perhaps it could, regain its place in the sun this year.
It would be a pretty exciting day in Wisconsin if that were the case. Maybe not so much for the campaigns of, say, Clinton and Obama. They're going to have to keep pouring money, resources, and tons of energy into that. But here in Wisconsin, that looks pretty good.
Well, it's important for people to not feel disenfranchised. And that was the argument against Super Tuesday for a lot of states. A lot of states were complaining that if you're after February 5th, and of course so many states tried to move up their primary to the February 5th deadline, but so many states that vote after February 5th, they felt that, well, the race will be over, the candidates will be coming into our state, our folks will be disenfranchised, it won't matter. For the first time in many, many years, at least going back to 84 with Walter Mondale and Gary Hart, these primaries are very, very crucial. And it could go very well on to, March and April primaries. And again, those are states like Texas, Ohio, which also thought that, the candidates would never bother coming to their states. Now they all matter.
That seems exhausting, doesn't it? I mean, they've been working so hard. Hillary Clinton has got this raspy frog of a voice. Isn't this taking a toll on the candidates?
Well, it is, because it's very impractical, especially tomorrow's contest. It's one thing in the old days. We always had, you know, Iowa, and then we had New Hampshire, and candidates could spend days at a time, if not a full week at a time, campaigning in that state, getting to know the voters, going into their living rooms, going to churches, going to campaign rallies. But when you have 24 states altogether tomorrow, 22 on the Democratic side, 21 on the Republican side, and a total of 24 states, the thought, the concept of campaigning in 22, 23 states all at once is just incomprehensible. And that's why people with less money, people like John Edwards, people like, other candidates, Rudy Giuliani, just really could not compete. It's just impossible to do it unless you either have a national organization, national ID, or tons of money.
Yeah, the strategies on the ground have been pretty interesting to watch unfolding as this intensifies. I read last night that McCain had the cheek to go to Massachusetts, and Mitt Romney said, well, I guess you're leaving California unguarded, hopped on a plane and headed out to California.
Well, it does show confidence on the McCain part. Again, the thought of John McCain being confident about his chances for the nomination are just so remarkable, because he wasn't even left for dead in the summer. He was dead. We were talking about who Romney would pick for his running mate or how Rudy Giuliani would win in Florida, and that would propel him to the nomination. There have been so many scenarios since last summer, and so many of them have been proven wrong. And that's what, you know, for all what the pundits have to say, what the polls have to say, what the pollsters have to say, it's nice to see that voters have something to say and have a stake in what's going to happen. And so far, the voters have been the ones making the call, not we smarty pants pundits.
Well, we've been seeing some huge numbers on that. And you got to wonder, is that the effect of these tight races, that people are going to be reinvested in politics in a way that they haven't been in a long time?
There are record turnouts. We've seen it even in the Democratic primary in Florida, which did not lead to any delegates because they were penalized by the National Party. Even the Florida Democrats had a record turnout. So the bad news for the Republicans is that Democratic voters seem to be far more energized than Republicans are. But the bad news for the Democrats is that if the fight between Obama and Clinton goes on beyond Super Tuesday, all the way through the convention, which is not a completely unlikely scenario, you never know what's going to happen. But if it goes on, you know, obviously the party that unites first has a better shot, or at least a good shot, at winning in November.
Well, we were talking about McCain being left for dead, as dead. Can you take a look back now and see if you can dissect a little bit what happened, how he did it?
Well, I could tell you what happened to the other candidates, and that may be part of it as well. Mitt Romney, on paper, was a very attractive candidate. He's good-looking. He has an unlimited amount of money. He was organizing very strongly for a long time in Iowa, and he had New Hampshire in his back pocket, being from neighboring Massachusetts. So he was going to win Iowa and New Hampshire, and that was going to propel him to the nomination. But one, he ran as a very strong right-wing social conservative, pro-life, anti-stem cell research, anti-gay marriage. That's not the way he was when he was governor of Massachusetts, certainly not the way he was when he ran for the Senate in 1994 against Ted Kennedy. He was then a moderate Republican, but not only did he run as a very socially conservative Republican, but he criticized other Republicans and spent heavily criticizing other Republicans like Mike Huckabee, like John McCain, like Rudy Giuliani, saying that they were not true conservatives. And a lot of Republicans resented that. I think a lot of people felt that the negative campaign tone of the Romney campaign resulted in a backlash. Meanwhile, the news in Iraq, which is still, I think, you know, whatever you think about the war, it seems to be improving in some ways. And some people are saying that John McCain's argument for a different strategy in support of the surge ultimately paid off for him. Plus the fact that he is a nice guy, or at least, you know, the perception of him is a nice guy, that he stays true to his beliefs, that he may not please everybody all the time. And there are a lot of conservatives who don't like him. Matter of fact, they detest him, but they feel that he speaks his mind. And that's, you know, and that's what I think on the obverse side of that, that's what hurt Hillary Clinton so much, is that many voters feel that, unlike Barack Obama, unlike John McCain, she may be too calculating, too careful, too cautious, and thus, you know, hurting herself with independence in November.
Yeah, it almost sounds like authenticity is sort of the name of the game this time around, and maybe we're ready to see authentic politicians. And in that sense, McCain kind of came out on top.
Right. And at the same time, Mitt Romney being pro-choice when he was governor, suddenly becoming very strongly pro-life, they feel that was not authentic at all.
We're going to take a break now and come back for more conversation with Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. He writes the weekly column Political Junkie. I hope you'll join in with your Super Tuesday thoughts and feelings this hour. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. At half past noon on Chapter Day, Jim Fleming reads from American Creation, Triumphs and Tragedies at the Founding of the Republic by Joseph J. Ellis. Veronica Rickert back with you this Monday morning. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking Super Tuesday with Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. He writes the weekly column Political Junkie for NPR. And Ken Rudin, we have some folks waiting to talk to you. Let's go ahead and take Marty in Douglas County. Hi, Marty. You're on the air.
Thanks. Good morning. Well, since Mr. McCain seems to be rising to the top of the heap, I'm wondering if Ken Rudin can give us a little history lesson. Can you go back over the details of the Keating Five scandal back, I believe it was in the 80s, and Mr. McCain's role in that? And I'm still very, very curious about John McCain's health, which was such an issue, or has been a concern in the last few years.
Well, the Keating Five doesn't seem to come up as much as I would have thought it was. You're absolutely right. John McCain was one of five senators. I think John Glenn, Dennis DeConcini, Alan Cranston, and Don Regal of Michigan, those are the other four, who did favors for a California savings and loan entity. Charles Keating was ahead of it. And McCain's involvement, I mean, he said he made some phone calls on his behalf. He didn't do much more than that. He only got a slap on the wrist from the Senate Ethics Committee. But McCain came away very humbled from that experience, and he said that experience perhaps is what got him interested in campaign finance reform, trying to overhaul the campaign finance system, how we elect public officers. His health is another question. If you notice, he has a large a lump on the right side of his face. It's from skin cancer. He's had skin cancer surgery. He's also 71 years old. He would be the oldest person ever elected president for the first time. Reagan, when he was first elected, was 69 years old. But, you know, McCain points to his mother. His mother is 95 years old. She's quite a character. She's very, you know, lively and energetic, perhaps too energetic. She says some things that are a bit intemperate at times. But it's a fair question, especially if he runs against Barack Obama in November, Barack Obama being young and active. But, you know, nobody has outworked John McCain. You talk about how he's 71 years old and he has health issues. The point is that he has been all over the place. He has been very accessible to the press. He has done tons of events and every day. And if he is going to get the nomination, he has certainly earned it, coming back from the dead, winning New Hampshire, winning South Carolina, winning Florida against all odds. But there are questions, less so much about ethics, but more about health and age. And I think that could prove to be, you know, a serious consideration coming into the fall.
I want to ask you about that. Among Democrats this season, and as in seasons past, election seasons, electability is starting to be a word you're hearing a lot. And if we saw, let's say, Barack Obama come out on top of the heap, how do you think that would look as compared to the seasoned statesman John McCain? We've got a young senator from Illinois who doesn't have much of a track record. Is that going to affect what Democrats think in terms of electability?
Well, it's certainly a consideration. We saw this when I was in Iowa in 2004, and I think 2 days before the caucuses, I expected Howard Dean to win the caucuses. But I talked to so many people going into the caucus sites that evening, and they said, look, maybe, you know, my heart is with Howard Dean, but I want to win. We should have won in 2000 with Al Gore, and we didn't. I don't want to lose again. So far, they switched to John Kerry and perhaps John Edwards. So I think winning is a very important calculation. And again, if polls show that Hillary Clinton is not likely to win in November, there are some polls that show anywhere between 35% and 45% of the population would never vote for her, then that could be a serious consideration for folks turning over to Barack Obama in the end. But just like we talk about John McCain in Marty's call earlier about his health and his age, there are considerations and questions about Barack Obama, too, about the substance of his issues, whether his health care proposal will cover as many people as Hillary Clinton's would. He's only had 2 or 3 years in the Senate. Is that enough experience compared to Hillary Clinton's term and a half plus 30, you know, all the years as First Lady in Arkansas and the White House? So all the candidates have pluses and minuses, but ultimately, I think the question of electability will be a very key consideration when voters decide.
Okay, well, thanks for that call, Marty. And here's one from Mike in Oshkosh. Hi, Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
Typically, the vice presidential pick of the presidential candidate is kind of, you know, it's kind of lukewarm and has it's pretty underwhelming. But in McCain's case, I would guess that because of his age, it is maybe not probable, but likely he would not run for a second term. So I would guess all those younger potential VP running mates with him would be biting at the bit to be his candidate, because then they could run a second term. And I'm wondering if the guest has heard anything, you know, that way, or if there's any, you know, VP potential candidates out there.
All right, thanks.
Well,
Mike.
I think John McCain was once asked that question, and he kind of giggled at the thought of worrying about 2012 when he hasn't gotten the nomination yet. But Mike is absolutely right. I mean, I think the importance of a running mate has always been overstated. Everybody was so excited when John Edwards was picked in 2004, and yet the Kerry Edwards ticket didn't pick up a single Southern state. So it's hard to make the case that Edwards mattered that much. But with McCain being 71 years old, being again the oldest person ever elected if he wins, and plus the fact that he is so distrusted by so many conservatives because of his views on immigration policy, because of campaign finance. And remember, he voted against two of President Bush's tax cuts. There are a lot of conservatives who don't trust him. So obviously, McCain will not only have to look for a younger running mate. Of course, it's hard to find anybody older than John McCain, but also somebody certainly more conservative, more acceptable to the conservative ranks. So on the Republican side, clearly, the VP choice will be widely discussed, very important. But look at the Democratic side, too. Hillary Clinton, if she gets the nomination, given the fact that her husband is so is there and you know, wherever she goes, the question is what Democrat would want to be vice president? Now, that sounds kind of silly, because any Democrat would want to be vice president. But when you consider how strong of an influence Bill Clinton has, you wonder what kind of an influence Hillary Clinton's vice president would have as well.
So you're thinking maybe we're looking at a bit of a troika of power at the top then.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. I mean, look, I think he has toned it down a lot. The campaign knows that she was really hurt by his comments before and during and after South Carolina primary. I think this week Bill Clinton is campaigning in Antarctica. No, that's not true. Actually, he's in California. But clearly the campaign realizes that for all the great respect that Democrats have had for the 8 years of the Bill Clinton presidency, he has hurt the Hillary campaign with some of his comments, and they're trying to tone that down.
I take one more quick call here from Matt in Lake Geneva. Hey, Matt, you're on.
Well, I don't know if I can be that quick, but I'll try. This horse race coverage of the primaries really leaves me very concerned for our country. I feel like we're now being allowed to consider a slate of candidates who've been approved by elite interests, you know, who've been aided and abetted by the mainstream media and the corporate pollsters. And now this is going to sound partisan, but I want to use Ron Paul as an example. Here's a guy who raised more money than anybody else in the Republican slate. This is a guy who had more volunteers mobilized than anybody. This is a guy who the fourth quarter FEC contribution figures now show received more contributions from military personnel than all the rest of the Republican slate combined. Yet, the media covered this guy from the beginning as though he was some kind of oddity. And while they did give him time when he raised $5 million and $4 million on different days in a single day, breaking all the records, they always covered it apart from the horse race coverage. Then they would switch from a story about Ron Paul's fabulous contributions and his volunteers, and they would switch to the horse race coverage where he would be absent. And they would be covering people like Fred Thompson and Rudy Giuliani, who were getting 3%, 4%, and 1% of the vote, while Ron Paul was getting 12% of the vote.
Thanks a lot for that call, Matt. So what do you think, Ken Rudin? Has the media been wagging the dog in terms of the candidates?
Well, I've heard the comment that Matt made from many, many people. There is a certain validity into the fact that for the longest time, too many of us were so focused on the horse race and not about what the candidates stand for. And I think that's been reprehensible. I argue about that every 4 years, and every 4 years it doesn't get better. But clearly, when we're down to where we are now, it is horse race coverage, because we're going, you know, tomorrow with the fact that we have 23 states voting. We're looking at polls. But on the Ron Paul question, first of all, he was treated as an oddity. He was, because he is a quirky congressman from Texas that nobody ever knew of before this presidential race. The same was, I think we treated Mike Huckabee the same way. He was seen as an oddity. He was seen as quirky. But I think the candidates had a chance to shine or show their case during the debates. Ron Paul, except maybe with one exception, Ron Paul was at every debate. I think, it was a national TV audience. It was either on CNN or MSNBC. Ron Paul was in every debate, as was every other candidate. For all the money he raised, for all the support he has in the blogosphere, when it came down to it, he wasn't getting 12%, as you mentioned. Maybe he got 7%, 8%. Now, I agree. For us to lavish all this attention on Rudy Giuliani, who did far worse than Ron Paul, is ridiculous. But ultimately, The voters have had their say. We've had a bunch of primaries so far. If Ron Paul raised all this money, why isn't he spending it on the campaign? Certainly Mitt Romney has $30 million. He spent it. If Ron Paul has $20 million, why isn't the Paul campaign spending it on ads, on campaign rallies and things like that? The point is that if you looked at all the debates, if you looked at all the candidates participating in the debates, Ron Paul got the same attention. No, let me stop for a second. Ron Paul has not gotten the same attention, but at least voters got a chance to see him in action during the debates, and they had their opportunity to vote for him during the primaries, and they did not. But I will agree, this is a very long, convoluted answer here, but I will agree that he did not get, given the amount of money he raised, given the fact that he was in every debate, he never got the media attention that the other candidates got, especially people like Fred Thompson and Rudy Giuliani, who showed no support, got no support from the voters at all.
All right. Well, thank you to Matt. And let's take one from Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Well, my argument would be that I don't think that Romney or McCain are authentic when they involve themselves in conning behavior. And I just point out that, for example, that Romney talked about the endorsement of McCain by the, quote, liberal New York Times. But this is the same New York Times that featured Judith Miller helping Mac Daddy George con us into war. Regarding McCain, he talks about running up the white flag of surrender. Well, in the first place, we beat Saddam. Secondly, the domino theory didn't work in Vietnam. Why would we think that Iraq in any form can seize other countries in a portion of the world that we dominate militarily? And third, we have a long history of the problems of extended empires. The Germans going into Russia, or the extended empire has cost countries many, many times. And McCain seems to think that the captain of the ship of state should go down with the Titanic in every situation, you know, that we should, if we have a losing proposition, that we should continue to support it. The fact of the matter is that we're losing in terms of expenditure of money, we're losing in terms of casualties, and we're losing in terms of damaged people that have to be healed when they come home. So the war is still a losing proposition. So why are we saying that we're winning, and why are we saying that that we're putting up the white flag of surrender if we make a logical conclusion that we should get out?
Thanks for that call. Ken Rudin?
Well, I don't think Jim is asking a question. I think he's stating a fact that most Democrats, I think, and probably most independents as well, feel that Iraq is a losing proposition, whether it was a mistake or not to go in, and a lot of people feel it was a mistake to go in, although Hillary Clinton voted to go in 2002. She since regretted her vote. But what John McCain is talking about is what many Republicans feel, that if, you know, we pull out now, they'll follow us home. He has said this over and over again. Except for Ron Paul, every Republican candidate supports the president's conduct in the war effort. And they feel that, you know, the national security is part of this calculation. I'm not convinced this is a winning, and I think Jim may be right in that I don't think this is necessarily a winning argument ultimately in November. So the question is whether if the debate in November is about the war and the conduct of the war, I'm not convinced the Republicans or John McCain wins. If it's about Hillary Clinton and, you know, these perhaps bogus issues of authenticity or likability. I mean, that seems kind of weird to compare a war with whether a candidate is likable or not. But if it turns around Hillary Clinton, it could be the Republicans' benefit. It's stranger things. Elections have turned on stranger things than foreign policy.
Ken, I have to ask you, you've been very gracious to stay with us past 9:30. We're having trouble getting a hold of our second guest this hour. I'm wondering if you have to go or if you have a few more minutes for us.
I have a few more minutes, plus the fact that Matt Bai with the New York Times, he's part of the mainstream media establishment, the corporate media. No, I'm teasing. No. I have time.
All right. Well, thanks so much for that. And I want to ask you a little bit about, this is actually something Matt Bai had brought up. I'd love to hear what you have to say, that in many ways, this race is being framed as a battle for the heart and soul of the Republican Party, and that in a sense, perhaps McCain represents sort of a looking backward in terms of wanting to return to maybe even Reagan-era politics. What do you think about, you know, who's going to win the heart and soul of the Republicans and where it's going?
Well, actually, Mitt Romney was campaigning yesterday saying over and over again that he represents the Reagan wing of the Republican Party and that John McCain is a liberal endorsed by the New York Times. Of course, he was also endorsed by the Manchester Union Leader, which is a very conservative newspaper. So I think it's hard to make the case that, look, if you're a liberal Democrat, the thought of John McCain being a liberal is just, you know, mind-boggling, given the fact that he is pro-life, supports the war, supports President Bush on 90% of the time. But if you're a Republican conservative, you feel that you don't trust him, that he voted against the tax cuts, that his immigration policy would ultimately mean amnesty for many of the millions of 12 to 14 million American illegal immigrants living in this country. So there's a big, you know, there are two different views of John McCain, and McCain is trying to sell himself as a conservative, as a, you know, he says he was a foot soldier in the Reagan Revolution, but there are some conservatives who said that even if the Democrats put up Hillary Clinton, they could never stomach a John McCain. So McCain's toughest fight may not necessarily be Mitt Romney. It may be winning over those conservatives if he's going to have a shot in November.
Well, it's interesting, though, because you have two campaigns. Hillary Clinton, who is, in a sense, sort of lobbying to go back to the golden era of the Clinton presidency. And then on the other hand, you've got McCain and Romney talking about going back to the golden era of Reagan politics here. And how come how come two of the major campaigns are looking back?
That is interesting, and it's interesting. The president we have now, George W. Bush, you hear no Republicans talking about a third Bush term. You remember in 1988 when Reagan was stepping down after two terms, everybody wanted to be the second coming of Ronald Reagan. Bob Dole, the senior George Bush, Jack Kemp, they always wanted a third Reagan term. But the current president Bush has been so unpopular that that obviously either the Republicans want to look ahead and look ahead to the next nominee or go back to the golden age of Ronald Reagan. And Democrats, too. Hillary Clinton reminds a lot of us that the 8 years of Bill Clinton in the White House were good economically. It was pre-9/11, which is a lifetime ago. But at the same time, there are a lot of Democrats who tell me over and over again that there was a lot of the Clinton years that they wish to forget, that the indiscretions in the White House, the Lewinsky scandal, the impeachment matter, whether the Republicans overreached or not, it was just a time that many Democrats would like to not have to go back to, not have to be reminded about again. And in that sense, Obama has an edge.
We have just heard that Matt Bai is sick. So, Ken Rudin, if you could stay with us longer, we'd be thrilled. We'd be thrilled in any case. So I'll leave that up to you as we go into this break now. But we are talking Super Tuesday politics this hour with Ken Rudin, who has stayed with us longer. We're very grateful for that. He is NPR's political editor and writes the weekly column Political Junkie for NPR. Hope you can join in the conversation this hour and tell us what you think, what you're expecting to see happening tomorrow. Maybe you're holding out hope that Wisconsin will still matter come February 19th. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. After 11, Larry Mueller's guest focuses on personal computing problems. He is Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, personal computer consultant. That's Larry Mueller after 11 o'clock today on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard. I'm filling in today for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're talking all things Super Tuesday with NPR political editor Ken Rudin. And Ken, were you able to stay with us a bit longer?
Yes, because I never stopped talking. Actually, the reason I have such a hoarse voice, I was screaming last night. I happen to be very neutral when it comes to politics, but not when it comes to the New York Giants. So I have no voice left. But one thing I want to mention also about candidates who have dropped out, and I think there's also an interesting thing about tomorrow. Rudy Giuliani dropping out and endorsing John McCain, I think, really helps McCain in states like New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, where it's winner take all and whoever, you know, wins that state gets every delegate. Mike Huckabee, on the other hand, refuses to drop out, and I think it's deliberate. Not because he thinks he could win the nomination, but I think he's so angry at the Mitt Romney early negative attacks that he would love to stay in and split the social conservatives who would normally go to Romney but go to Huckabee. So
he wants Huckabee to be a thorn.
I think so. I think he's very angry at the way that Romney ran the campaign. On the other side of the coin, John Edwards, I don't know what to make of his withdrawal. There's some argument that says that he and Barack Obama were splitting the anti-Hillary vote. And if that's the case, then maybe his withdrawal will help Barack Obama. I saw that a lot of his supporters have gone to the Obama camp. But, you know, it's very possible that John Edwards appeal to many white rural voters in the South. And, you know, you never know how race will play in a campaign. I can't imagine that it's gone away completely as an issue. And it's very possible that, you know, he was splitting the white vote as well, and that could help Hillary Clinton. So it's too soon to say what his withdrawal means, but it's one of those imponderables that we'll be looking at for tomorrow.
Well, I want to ask you a question about that. John Edwards had been saying, right up to about when he dropped out, I'm in it for the long run. I'm not going anywhere. And he drops out before Super Tuesday. Is that something politicians always say when they're in the race for the nomination, that they intend to stay in it the whole way so no one's going to leave them sooner? Or is that unusual?
Well, both. And the reason I think it's really not unusual, because, of course, you need to raise money. You don't want to tell your campaign supporters who are holding fundraisers.
We lost Ken Rudin there. Let's see if we can get him back. Try once more. Ken Rudin, are you there? I think we lost our ISDN connection with Ken Rudin. It was interesting stuff he was saying. We'll see if we can get him back. But in the meantime, let's go ahead and take a call from Mark, calling from Colfax. Mark, you're stuck talking to me, but we'd love to hear what you have to say.
Okay. Well, I wanted to start out saying that I've been a Democrat for a long time, but I cannot work for Hillary Clinton, and I don't know if I can even vote for her, because I don't think that the Clintons have any ethics or integrity. But the question I had for Ken was, I'm wondering how much Barack Obama might be hurt by the blue-collar workers that I talked to, especially the men. They keep mentioning that they're getting emails and reading off the internet that Barack Obama is a Muslim who is not even a real United States citizen. And, you know, do we need a terrorist in the White House? And they believe this stuff. And I'm wondering how much that's going to hurt him.
Well, I can't speak to that, but I have a question for you in terms of the Clintons and ethics. So you're a Democrat.
Yeah.
And what do you think about Hillary Clinton in terms of the polarizing figure argument, which everyone has said? It seems as though, do you believe that's true? Do you believe Hillary Clinton to be a polarizing figure?
Absolutely. That's another reason I wouldn't vote for her, because if she becomes president, this country is going to remain split down the middle, and we need to start coming together at some point.
Are you willing to say who you would support come Super Tuesday, or not Super Tuesday, but come the Wisconsin primary?
Oh, in the Wisconsin primary, I'm going to vote for Barack Obama.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. I'm sorry that Ken is not with us to answer that.
Well, maybe you can ask him if he gets back.
We'll try
Ken's
to do that.
Okay.
Ken's back. Beautiful.
Ken's back.
What good timing.
Yeah. I just took a brief nap.
You needed a coffee break.
Yeah.
Did you happen to hear our caller's question?
I heard the end saying that he the call. I just heard the end of the call where he said that he would not vote for Hillary Clinton because she was polarizing and would vote for Obama. I've heard so many Democrats say that. That again, that on the issues, she's there's nobody better. She's very detailed, but there's something about her that just turns off many voters. It's the fact that she seems less likely or less able to reach across party lines than Barack Obama. Then, you know, again, we don't know much about Obama. We don't know what he brings to the table. He has not had that much experience. The word gravitas comes up a lot. But he has said over and over again, if you listen to him during debates, he mentions people like Dick Lugar and other Republicans he's worked with, whereas Hillary Clinton likes to talk about how the right-wingers love to gang up on her, and she took on the right-wingers. I don't think partisanship is going to disappear, whatever happens, whoever wins, but I can't imagine it going away if Hillary Clinton is the winner.
Well, just to follow up on the second part of Mark's question, while you were having your nap, Mark said that he had heard that certain people, I'm not sure which demographic he's talking about here or who he's talking about, but he had mentioned that there were sort of under the board rumors that people were woefully misinformed about Barack Obama, saying, you know, he was a terrorist and concerned about him being a Muslim and just sort of rumor mongering among the Barack Obama detractors. Have you heard anything like that?
There has been a despicable whispering campaign going on for quite some time about Barack Obama, that he was Muslim, he's like a fifth columnist for Al Qaeda. Of course, a lot of people like to refer to him. His middle name, of course, is Saddam. It's Hussein, isn't it? Wait, Saddam. I'm sorry. It's Barack Hussein Obama. That's his middle name. So, Bob Kerry, the former Nebraska senator who was endorsing Hillary Clinton a few months back, saying, well, I think Barack Hussein Obama will do a great job. And I think that campaign has been out for a long time, that whispering campaign about what Barack Obama really stands for. It's despicable. We saw a lot of that coming out of South Carolina, too, on race and religion. It's been disproven. Barack Obama was asked about that during the debate. He said, that's not true. I am a Christian. I am not a Muslim. I am not working. I am not getting funding from terrorist camps around the world. But, you know, you can't, you know, the internet is a very interesting thing. It's amazing what goes on and gets spread through that.
Is that stuff having any effect?
I don't know. Again, states like New York, New Jersey, California, it's a state where it could have some resonance. But I think, you know, as much as it's been passed around, the Obama campaign has gone around refuting it. And I think if you looked at some of the major endorsements he's gotten over the last couple of weeks, not only from Ted Kennedy, Maria Shriver, Caroline Kennedy, but he's gotten endorsements from many red state Democrats, Janet Napolitano, the governor of Arizona, Claire McCaskill, the senator from Missouri, Kathleen Sebelius, the Democratic governor of Kansas. So a lot of Democrats in red states are making the case that it's Obama, not Hillary Clinton, who has the best shot of winning these Republican states in November.
Thank you to Mark for that call. And let's take one from John in Rhinelander. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. Just had a few points. One, I just caught part of the program here with Ken. I picked up when he said that he was talking about Mike Huckabee. And I think one of the things is his comment was kind of reflective of what really disappoints me about the whole campaign and I guess the public in general in our elections. You know, he oversimplifies so many things. He's saying that the only reason Huckabee's staying in is for a negative reason to hurt Romney. And, you know, obviously a lot of the candidates stay in to make points. He may be trying to become a vice president or, you know, look for a future campaign, or maybe he does have a chance. But it's not about Mike Huckabee. It's the point that so much of what the candidates say is just a repetition of basically headline comments. For example, in the Democratic debate, when they talked about the health care systems and were asked how they're going to pay for it, both candidates claimed that half of their payments or more would come from savings. And, you know, and you can logically see that just because there's a savings in the health care industry by whatever, whether it's capping, reducing lawsuits or whatever, that doesn't translate into a payment for the system. It could translate into more profits or many things. And the other thing is that so much of the campaigns on both sides is based on such negativity. It seems like such a fervent, almost hatred in cases, and an eagerness to just get a candidate in on a party line, regardless of the issues. For example, when on the State of the Union, you have a presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton, on national television, thanking the heavens that it's the last time she has to hear a current president giving a national State of the Union. During all the difficulties you have in the world, there's this constant, even in the debate, just constant reference to no more Republicans, no more Bush, regardless of what people's opinion are of how an individual candidate or president, let's say, has done. That oversimplification and basically negative attitude would that seem to get into almost every answer is hardly a basis on which somebody should be elected. So I'm just kind of disappointed, I think, in the overall basis on which so many comments are made. Maybe the most surprising thing to me, and this is the last thing, is how I don't really understand how Barack Obama seems to be almost the new Messiah. I never really hear very much depth in his answers. He may have accomplished something in his state and as a senator, but again, you know, what has he actually said in depth, other than just words like change and other things? What has he really said on a more detailed level that really brings up something that should give him this sort of a fervor that he brings to this? I'm really missing that. So maybe you could address some of those points.
Okay, thanks, John. A lot of points there, Ken Rudin.
Yeah, two things I want to talk about. First of all, about Mike Huckabee. If I left the impression that the only reason he's in is to hurt Mitt Romney, I don't know if I said that, but if I said that, that's not how I feel at all. I think what Mike Huckabee has brought to this campaign is the fact that, again, he was optimistic. He was engaging. He was funny. He, as opposed to the nastiness between some of the candidates, Huckabee always brought this positive outlook. And I think one of the reasons he did so well in Iowa, he won the Iowa caucuses, and he almost won South Carolina, I think is because of the kind of positive campaign he's run. And I think voters have responded favorably to that. About the Obama point, there are a lot of Clinton people who say the exact same thing. They say, look, other than change, what is he saying? And what kind of a record does he have? I don't think he has much of a record, but I think sometimes the need, the crying out for change, the crying out for hope may be enough. I mean, ultimately, it may not be enough. It could be in 2009, 2010, after we've elected Barack Obama, some people could say, well, what were we thinking? We didn't know anything about him. But I think there are so many voters who are so tired of politics as usual. If they feel that Hillary Clinton represents that politics as usual, they'd be willing to roll the dice and go with Obama. It's very possible that Obama may be clearly a roll of the dice, but so far nothing else has worked. And when we talk about experience, a lot of people say, well, you know, Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld had tons of experience, and look where they got us. So a very unpopular war. So I think nothing seems to have worked so far. I think Obama is bringing change. I think change can be a kind of a vacuous slogan, but some people might feel that, well, we've tried everything else. Why not try that?
I want to ask you to look a little bit further down the road, and this is assuming that Super Tuesday is not decisive, at least for the Democrats. Are you familiar, are you thinking much about this, the superdelegate scenario?
Well, okay, a lot of people are not aware of what goes on. Not only does every state have, well, let's talk about the Democrats because it's mostly a Democratic thing. The Democrats, there are delegates at stake in the primaries. There are also hundreds, perhaps 20% of all the delegates selected are superdelegates. These are delegates who are automatically delegates. They are governors, senators, important party officials. They can vote, they can support any candidate they want, regardless of how their state votes in the primary. So, you know, you could have a senator from Wisconsin. Herb Kohl is an automatic delegate. Russ Feingold is an automatic delegate. And they will automatically go to the convention. It doesn't matter what the voters have to say. Hillary Clinton is doing far better than Barack Obama, I think because she had been seen as the national front runner for so long. But as more doubts begin creeping into the conversation about Clinton's electability, if not inevitability, as Barack Obama is doing better in the national polls, even though national polls are really not as important as state-by-state polls, because that's what's where the action is. As Barack Obama is improving, his standing with these superdelegates may improve as well. But until now, a lot of people felt that if it was a dead-even race between Obama and Clinton, she would ultimately win the nomination because of the support of these superdelegates. It'll be very interesting to see who does very well, who does better on Super Tuesday, and whether there'll be a flood of endorsements from superdelegates one way or the other.
Well, it's interesting, just to raise the ghost of Matt Bai, who's not with us this hour, but his article in the New York Times on Sunday talks about a scenario in which the superdelegates do not go. I mean, superdelegates, as I understand it, are designed sort of to toe the party line, and if establishment Democrats wanted the superdelegates to vote for Hillary Clinton, they would do it. And he's arguing that among Democrats now, there's sort of a more Wild West mentality, that they might go a bit rogue and sort of do what they want to do.
Well, especially the fact that if polls show that Hillary Clinton is not going to win, not going to beat John McCain in November, and Barack Obama will. They're very smart. One of the reasons they established this system, it came after the 1972 election when George McGovern won the nomination. I mean, he was a favorite of many anti-Vietnam folks, but as it turned out, he lost 49 out of 50 states in November. And then so they tried to have these superdelegates coming out in 1984, and when Walter Mondale was running against this upstart Gary Hart, a lot of the superdelegates said, well, Walter Mondale is the establishment choice. We'll go with him. And so Walter Mondale was a nominee, and he lost 49 out of 50 states. So superdelegates can be as fallible as regular voters are. But I think winning is the ultimate. The Democrats felt they should have won in 2000. They didn't. They should have won in 2004, and they didn't. They don't want to do it a third time, so I don't think they're going to rush off a cliff with Hillary Clinton just because she's a so-called national frontrunner. They're going to wait to see who they feel is best likely to win in November.
Well, Ken Rudin, thanks so much for staying with us, and I hope your voice recovers. Have some tea. You can get that nap now. But we really appreciate you staying with us this hour. It's been wonderful.
Thanks, Veronica.
Thanks a lot. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor and columnist of Political Junkie for NPR. I'm Veronica Rickert in this hour for Kathleen Dunn, and I want to thank Rhonda Fanning and Carmen Jackson for their production this hour. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.